Chapter 50. Spence, that dour, imposing lady east of London, has grown a friendly face in my absence. I've never been so happy to see a place in all my 16 years. Even the gargoyles have lost their fierceness. They are like wayward pets who haven't the sense to come in from the roof, and so we let them live there, glaring but cheerful. The rumours surrounding the night the constable found me in Baker Street have already run rampant through the school. I was kidnapped by pirates. I lay at death's door. I nearly lost a leg, no, an arm, to gangrene. I actually died and was buried, only to pull the bell rope with my toe, giving the poor gravedigger a fright when he had to release me from the coffin in the nick of time. It is astonishing the stories girls will concoct to relieve their boredom. Still, it is nice to have everyone offering to do things for me, to have them part when I enter a room. I shan't lie, I am enjoying my convalescence immensely. Felicity has taken it upon herself to give the younger girls archery lessons. They adore her, of course, with her Parisian hair combs and status as one of the older, fashionable girls. I suspect that they would follow her like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, no matter how nasty she chose to be. And I suspect that Felicity is aware of this and rather enjoys having a crowd of adorers. As I am under strict orders from Grandmama and Mrs. Nightwing to do no exercise until I am well again, I sit under a mound of blankets in a large chair that has been brought out especially for me. It is, I find, the best way to exercise, and I shall try to extend this for as long as possible. Out on the great lawn, the targets are in place. Felicity instructs a passel of 10-year-olds in the proper technique, correcting this one's form, chiding that one for giggling. Admonished, the giggling girl stands straight, closes one eye, and shoots. The arrow bounces along the ground and sticks in a lump of dirt. "No, no," Felicity sighs. "Pay attention. I shall demonstrate proper form again." I open the morning's post. There is a letter from Grandmama. She doesn't mention anything of father until the end. "Your father is making progress at the sanitarium and sends his warm regards." There is also a small parcel from Simon. I am afraid to open it, but eventually curiosity wins out. Inside is the small black box I returned to him by messenger, along with its original note, "A place to keep all your secrets." That is all. He has surprised me. Suddenly, I am not at all sure of what I am doing, of whether I have done the right thing by letting him go. There is something so very safe and comforting about Simon, but it's a bit like the false-bottomed box, that feeling. I know only that something in me senses I might eventually fall through the bottom of his bright affection and find myself trapped there. I've been so absorbed that I haven't noticed Mrs. Nightwing behind me. She takes in the sight of the girls with bows and arrows and clucks in disapproval.
"I am not at all certain about this," she says.
"It is nice to have choices," I say, the box in my hand. I'm trying not to cry.
"In my day there were not such choices, such freedom. There was no one to say, 'Here is the world before you. You have only to reach for it.'"
At that moment, Felicity's hand springs open, releasing the arrow. It cleaves the air in two and finds its target directly in the centre, a solid bullseye. Felicity cannot contain herself. She shrieks with the joy of victory in a most natural and unladylike fashion, and the girls follow suit. Mrs. Nightwing shakes her head and raises her eyes briefly to heaven.
"No doubt the fall of civilization is at hand."
A faint smile escapes, and just as quickly she stifles it. For the first time, I notice the lax skin at Mrs. Nightwing's jaw, the fine down that lies upon her cheek like the imprint of a child's hand, and I wonder what it must be like watching yourself soften under the years, unable to stop it. What it's like measuring your days in perfecting girls' curtsies and drinking nightly glasses of sherry, trying to keep up with the world as it pulls you spinning into the future, knowing you are always one step behind. Mrs. Nightwing glances at the box in my hands. She clears her throat.
"I understand you've decided against Mr. Middleton."
I see other rumours have spread as well. "Yes," I say, fighting back the tears.
Everyone thinks me mad. Perhaps I am mad. I try to laugh, but it comes out a small sob. Perhaps there is something the matter with me that I cannot be happy with him. I wait for Mrs. Nightwing to confirm that this is the case, that everyone knows it, that I should dry my eyes and stop acting the fool. Instead, her hand comes to rest on my shoulder.
"It is best, to be sure, through and through," she says,
keeping her eyes steadfastly on the girls running and playing on the lawn.
"Else you could find yourself one day coming home to an empty house, save for a note. I've gone out. You could wait all night for him to return. Nights turn into weeks, to years. It's horrible, the waiting. You can scarcely bear it. And perhaps years later, on holiday in Brighton, you see him, walking along the boardwalk as if out of some dream, no longer lost. Your heartbeat quickens. You must call out to him. Someone else calls first. A pretty young woman with a child. He stops and bends to lift the child into his arms. His child. He gives a furtive kiss to his young wife. He hands her a box of candy, which you know to be Chollier's chocolates. He and his family stroll on. Something in you falls away. You will never be as you were. What is left to you is the chance to become something new and unsure, but at least the waiting is over.
I'm scarcely breathing. Yes, thank you, I say, when I manage to find my voice again. Mrs. Nightwing gives my shoulder one small pat before taking her hand away to straighten her skirt, smoothing the waistband of its creases. One of the girls shouts. She's found an orphaned baby bird that has somehow survived the winter. It cries in her hands as she runs to Mrs. Nightwing with it.
Oh, what madness is this?
Our headmistress mutters, springing into action.
Mrs. Nightwing, please, may we keep it?
The young girl's face is open and earnest.
Please, please!
The girls chirp like the eager little chicks they are.
Oh, very well.
The girls erupt in cheers. Mrs. Nightwing shouts to be heard.
But I shall not be responsible for it. It is your charge. You keep it. I've no doubt I'll come to regret this decision, she says with a sniff. And now, if you'll excuse me, I should like to finish my book, alone, without the presence of a single ringleted girl to disrupt me. If you should come for me at dinner, and find me in my chair, gone to the angels at last, you shall know that I died alone, which is to say in a state of utter bliss.
Mrs. Nightwing marches down the hill toward the school. At least four girls stop her along the way to ask about this or that. They besiege her. At last she gives up and, with a gaggle of girls in tow, heads into Spence. She will not read her book until this evening, and somehow I know that this is what she wants, to be needed. It is her charge. It is her place. She has found it, or it has found her.